Hey there, listeners. We mentioned this on our Monday podcast, but 538 is launching a big oral history project that we're really excited about. It's called When Women Run, and it's about the political landscape that women face when they run for office. To talk more about the project is the producer for this episode, Grace Lynch. Grace, tell us a little bit more about When Women Run.
Thanks, Galen. There are more women in office than ever before, and gender has certainly haunted the Democratic primary this year. So to better understand what happens when women run for public office, we wanted to go straight to the source. We interviewed 97 women, including at least one from every state, across party lines and generations, about their experiences. So what you're about to hear is a compilation of those many interviews. This was a huge effort by the whole newsroom to bring this together, and we're rolling out new elements of this story on the site all week long. So with that, we hope you enjoy this audio version of When Women Run.
Over the years, I'm sure you've been asked so many different things by voters while you've been on the campaign trail in various elections. But I'm wondering, in general, do you think your gender, the fact that you're a woman, has informed the kinds of questions you've gotten from voters?
One thing that people frequently ask me is, who is taking care of my daughter?
I'm a Republican, so I do not focus on gender. I focus on values.
In my experience, voters at the door were never the issue, but my gender definitively mattered to the media and to donors, to the party, influencers. Donors would ask, you know, they'd ask about, you know, my husband, they'd ask about my divorce, they'd ask whether or not I wanted to have children, which I always found fascinating.
When I was elected in 1972, I was the only Republican woman in the House of Representatives. I would say that gender was a factor in my election because I really had to prove myself more than I think my male opponents did. I was a conservative, and a lot of people said, well, will you really be conservative? Are you really conservative, or are you really soft on the issues that we would care about?
There were some people on Facebook that talked about, you know, the size of my butt, what my hair looked like, you know, that kind of stuff. Oh, she's eating again, like if I went to a lunch or something like that. There's one person on Facebook that refers to me as crackhead.
I remember encountering a man on the campaign trail. He said, do you think that as a woman, being with all those men, you'll be able to get anything done? And I said, absolutely.
I feel like the questions that I have been asked are really very much about our local community environment. While I have had people say, I'm thankful that we have a woman as mayor, I think a lot of the issues that we face and the questions that have come before me are not gender-based at all.
I do recall during that first campaign in 1976, I would knock on doors to introduce myself, and interestingly, it was more mature women who had more questions for me than the men, quite frankly. It was not uncommon for a woman and a homemaker and a stay-at-home mom to ask me if I thought it was appropriate for a woman to serve in public office. Do you think you can manage serving in public office and take care of your family as well?
I think being a woman was a bigger issue when I ran for mayor than a school board. I think people could accept a woman being on the school board.
No. Nope. I can say I don't believe that.
People would ask me, you know, why as a woman would you run as a Republican? Why as a Hispanic woman would you run as a Republican? Kind of questioning your sort of loyalty to your culture or to your gender. It was interesting.
I would never vote for somebody because they're a woman, and I would hope that nobody would vote for me because I'm a woman.
I remember when I was running for Secretary of State in 2008, Hillary must have been on the ballot at that same time. I got a comment question from a Democratic voter. I had a very hotly contested primary election, and this Democrat said to me, well, I'm supporting your opponent because he has a family to support.
Because we had never elected a female attorney general, I was often asked on the campaign trail, well, do you think that you're tough enough?
What I do know is that being a woman was sort of a distinct advantage in the climate that I was running in, which is, you know, 2 years into the Trump presidency.
I had one instance when I was in, that stands out, when I was county auditor, where I had a gentleman walk up to me and started telling me about a book he was reading about the fall of the Roman Empire. And he was telling me why it fell. And I thought it was going to be some interesting lesson in history. And then he told me it was because of feminism, which I thought was interesting. And I kind of kept listening to him. And then he just went into this whole thing about how feminism is this big problem. And all I could think of was, I thought it was Christianity that made the Roman Empire fall, but okay, whatever.
This was from a supporter. He said, you know, there was just something off-putting about her voice. I don't know if it was because she didn't have a microphone, but it almost sounded, here you go, shrill to me. And I was like, you are not using the word that they use to describe Hillary Clinton. And I had never had anyone describe my voice in that way, by the way.
Most men were raised, you treat the women with more respect than you would a fellow man. So, you know, I've always felt that being a woman has given me more of an advantage. You know, I was raised during the time period of affirmative action, and where your minorities, you know, they were put ahead of the line. So the white male has really been the one that's been oppressed in the last 30 years, not the woman, not the black, not the Mexican.
I was often asked if I had kids, and I would very frequently answer immediately, yes. I learned to temper that response at first just to see, you know, really, why are you asking me that question?
I remember going door to door in Juneau, and once in a while, the person who answered the door would say quite unequivocally, you may be a very nice person, but I'm never voting for a woman. So it was more permissible 30, 40 years ago to actually be honest about that. And it is less that way today, but I think biases remain.
As early as my last election to Congress in 2016, folks were asking me if I felt like I had given up too much time away from my family. And as a caregiver for my mom, was it fair to my mother?
Heck, I even had people ask me, do you think she's tough enough to be in politics? You think she has tough enough skin? And I was like, folks, remember, I was spit at, I was called names, and they told me to go back to the kitchen.
While I like what you're talking about, and it's definitely what I need, I have a hard time voting for a woman because I don't see a woman ever being president, and I don't think women should be in these leadership roles. Yet, you know, I can see you being governor particularly. So it was because of, they said, the firmness of my voice and my handshake and, you know, that I was tall. So they actually had to meet me instead of just, you know, placing me into a gender and then discounting me for being a woman.
I've had everything from, you know, people saying really disgusting things about my appearance, that I'm stupid, that I'm a liar, that it was all very, very personal. I remember there were times where I would have panic attacks, that I would be teary-eyed, that I couldn't breathe. I would have to literally talk myself into getting out of the car because of comments like that.
What I will say is I did have people come up to me and say, I voted for you because you're a woman and we need more women in office. And that didn't feel good. That felt yucky. I was like, no, thank you. That cheapens my qualifications. I feel gross about pushing that narrative of vote for me because I'm a female and we're lacking in representation.
I think that my gender does influence the kind of questions and the kind of cases that constituents brought to me. I think women politicians, as they run for office, have a more accessible air about them.
Shockingly, I was never asked my marital status by a voter.
I also had people telling me that I shouldn't utilize identity politics. And I said, look, I can't change who I am. I am Latina. My name is Serena Gonzalez Gutierrez. I can't change any of that.
You know, gender wasn't a forefront experience for me. I was surprised, actually, not to get more questions about what it meant to my family to be doing this or what it meant to be a mother.
My political director was also a woman. And so oftentimes,
we would be on the back roads of Alabama going to endorsement conferences, and folks who were concerned male who would walk us to our car to go, oh my God, are you guys going to get, how are you going to get back to Birmingham? And we're like, we're going to drive. And what, you know, what if there's a flat tire? And why are there no men escorting you on these back roads? So it was really quite interesting.
No, I don't think there's any difference in how voters approach me or ask questions. And I'm glad about that. I hope that they chose me because I'm the best person, not because of my gender.
I was at some event and some man came up to me. He goes, would you dance with me? And I said, well, sure. And he said, you know, my wife told me to vote for you last time. And he said, I didn't. But this time I did. He said, you've been a good congresswoman. That to me was so rewarding. It was someone who's being completely honest and who, as a man, just couldn't vote for a woman in the prior election. But he had a sea change.
When I first ran, I had people tell me, don't call yourself Patty. If you're on the ballot as Pat, maybe people will vote for you because they think you're a man. I had people say to me, what are you going to do with your kids? I don't think any man gets asked that question. I had people say to me, I can't vote for you because I just don't think a woman can do the same job as a man.
How much did you think about the way that you presented yourself in public?
You have to think about it because it's not just about who I am. It's what people see. And I think it's disingenuous to believe that appearance doesn't matter. The issue, though, is how is appearance judged as a part of the whole and not as the sole marker of our effectiveness? And where women have been mistreated is that we are expected to look exactly the same and that we're expected to meet a certain model of perfection and a certain aspect of what people expect to see. And that I refuse.
I wear a blazer every single day. It's very rare for me to wear like even a cardigan. And part of that is because as you build credibility, I never want my colleagues to think of me as like a little sister. I need them to think of me as a peer.
I don't know that gender has and people's perception of gender has played a role in the way that I dress. But I can certainly tell you that it plays a role in the way that I talk. I go out of my way not to sound strident or not to sound angry or not to sound, you know, like a quote-unquote hysterical female or quote-unquote angry black woman.
I gave a speech to the Chamber of Commerce, and it was on business and economic development. And I prepared a lot for it and talked to people. And at the end, there was loud applause, and this man who I knew well, a businessman, came up to me with a big smile on his face, and he said, Madeline, I just love your hair. I just sank. I mean, that's obviously not what I expected him to say.
I certainly got a lot of critiques from the media and constituents about my hair. Why don't you do something with your hair? Or why don't you cut your hair? Or why don't you curl your hair? Everyone had a different idea of what kind of hairstyle I should have.
If a man was standing with his wife, I always spoke to the wife first. I always engaged with her before I would ever talk to the man. And I think that just came as a way trying to take any kind of sexuality out of it. I think you are conscious of that.
There was the pearl thing, right? And that's a code word for us. We call them our Hillary pearls. Those are, for at least us, whenever we know there's going to be a big fight, then we're going to break out like our big pearls. You have to have a certain grace when you wear pearls. So even if you're telling somebody off, you got pearls on, it kind of maybe softens it a little bit.
I'll never forget that one of our first promotional pictures that went out, I was literally in a men's white Oxford. There was absolutely nothing sexualized about this picture. And I got an email from a woman. She went on a diatribe about how I didn't look like a community leader. I didn't look like someone who was smart or knowledgeable. I looked like I was vying for an online dating app.
On my swearing-in day in 2004, I was wearing a gray skirt suit that I bought at the Goodwill that I'm positive belonged to somebody who was at least 15 or 20 years older than me. That's what I thought I should look like to be taken seriously.
I'm always very careful in limiting it to very conservative wear, but I do draw the line in my nails. I always like to have my nails red because I am a fiery Latina.
There was really nothing that I did that was particular to being a female running for office. I was who I was, and that was that.
The toughest parts for me, and even now, is having to be dressed casual. What do you wear in a parade when it's hot out, but I can't do khaki pants because I wouldn't look good in khaki pants. It would be too hot. I can't do shorts because they're like khaki pants and they could be too tight.
Early on, I was giving a floor speech, and a man who is a good friend and he was an important staff person for the caucus came up to me and told me that I needed to modulate my voice because I was shrill. And if I wanted people to listen to me, I shouldn't be shrill.
I did an event, or I was out in a campaign thing at a construction work site, and I had jeans on. And there were several news stories around the jeans. I wonder where she got the jeans. Did she buy the jeans just for this? What kind of jeans are they?
When I ran in 2012, a number of my inner circle kind of advisory committee were, you know, seasoned elected officials who were male. And I have longer red hair, and I had one who said, you know, they literally gave me pictures of some of my female counterparts that are in elected office. And the inference was, you know, you should really think about cutting your hair a little shorter because you want to look more polished and professional. But of course, all it made me want to do was grow my hair longer and not wear a suit.
It's easier for men to throw on a pair of khakis and a blue shirt and walk out the door. But if we put on a dress that's a little bit too short, or we put on a pair of shorts when we should have put on a dress, or perhaps we weren't quite modest enough when we walked in the parade in 100-degree heat, people get a bit snarky.
In 2008, any number of consultants to my congressional campaign all tried to tell me that I don't look Hispanic enough. I don't know what that looks like, quite frankly. Maybe people have not been to Spain and not been into regions in Mexico, certainly haven't met my family, but that's an outrageous statement. And I guess people were expecting that my skin should be darker and my hair should be darker and maybe my eyes. I don't know what they were expecting, but I did get plenty of advice that I should work on that. I was outraged by that.
I felt the need to always be, you know, very well made up and well coiffed and the whole nine yards. Since I always made sure I presented myself that way, I was always received well. Would I have been received as well if I had just sort of like thrown on whatever and run out the door with no makeup on? I don't know. Probably not.
I recall at one point being at a meeting and a woman came up to me afterward and said, you won't get anywhere wearing shoes like that.
Now, when I ran for mayor, I made a mistake. I'll be a little more traditional woman and a little less gay. Huge mistake. A huge mistake. Because if you're spending a lot of time thinking about how you should present yourself, that's the definition of inauthentic. The definition. And I got criticized for not being authentic. Hit the nail on the head. As opposed to what I should have done in the mayor's race is said, hi, I'm Chris Quinn. I'm a bitch. Everybody knows it.
You know, should I wear a skirt or a dress or should I not? Will I offend somebody if I wear a skirt or a dress or will I not? Is my hair too short? Do I need to wear makeup? Do I need to put on more jewelry? Do I need to take off some jewelry? I spent a ridiculous amount of time being counseled on my appearance. I also focused a lot of time on the language that I used based on where I was going to be. I was having to be careful about the vernacular I was using, avoid slang words in this area or words that someone might find offensive somewhere else. Don't laugh too much. Don't forget to laugh.
Ironically, one of the hardest things to dress for as a female candidate in Maryland is what to wear to a crab feast.
Oh my gosh. So much. But I think on top of that, like I mentioned earlier, not only being a woman, but being a woman of color, there's even more pressure. I like to wear my hoop earrings. I am a 90s Latina or Chicana, and you don't outgrow those even as you get older. I toned that down and didn't wear the big, big ones. I wore the smaller ones. But now that I'm elected, I wear them, and I wear them when I'm in session.
I dress differently than most everybody up here. I mean, I don't feel like you need to look like a man to look professional, and a lot of women do, and I think that's sad.
you know, was told by folks in the campaign that I should make myself more approachable, whatever that means.
The only thing I would say that I believe is harder for women is just the wardrobe.
Even deciding what color I should be wearing, the conversation was, you know, it can't be pink, it can't be red, because people generally don't like a powerful woman, like in my age, because I was running as an incumbent, we were concerned that it was going to be overly aggressive. When we would talk about like debate prep, it was make sure you're talking slowly, because when you get excited, your voice gets higher and it sounds more feminine. If you talk quickly, it sounds more feminine.
I am half Iranian. I am a person who is unlikely to show up anywhere in a blazer. And I got feedback from an individual who had run for office, an older, very well-meaning woman, who suggested that maybe I cut my hair and start wearing pantsuits and blazers and be less emotional. And I remember writing back, you know, kindly, I feel good in a dress. I don't have time to change the way that I look or buy a new wardrobe to fit some picture that you're describing that sounds incredibly masculine to me. And so I'm going to be who I am.
Is there a moment in your career where you really felt like you experienced sexism?
Well, this one's kind of personal, but there was a moment somewhat recently where I had advances from a major donor that were completely inappropriate, and I was incredibly naive, and I felt shielded by the fact that I was mayor of the third largest city in a state from the United States of America. Like, no one would dare do that, and I was wrong. I thought I would be immune to it because I'm an elected official, and I'm not. People still see me as a woman and an object, which is really unfortunate.
The uproar around my need to take a few days off when I was on bed rest and my twins were born has to take the cake.
When I was switching parties, he said, I discovered her, I made her, and she's here because of me. It exemplified how I constantly felt like I was fighting being objectified or being propped up as a model for something. It happened to me a lot with the Republican Party. They needed women, they needed minorities, and they would sort of hand me some talking points and say, here, be the face for this thing that is ours.
We got called into the speaker's office and they were all men. And the guy that I was sort of up against was also a man, a white man. And speaker kept looking at me and saying, well, walk me through sort of your policy position. And I would start talking and he would start talking over me every single time. And it happened maybe three or four times. And then we took a break. We walked out. I was so mad. I pushed him up against the wall. And I said, every time you do that, every time you disrespect me, you are disrespecting the 37,000 people I represent. So knock it off. And he never did it again. We're actually very good friends now.
I always want to hold my own and not ever cry victim. So I really appreciate you not using sexism when it comes to me.
In my last election was for governor. In my primary, I was running against two male candidates who both used in their campaign efforts that you can't have two women back to back. That is a disaster. No state's going to do it. Our state certainly isn't. And because the last woman was a terrible governor as part of our primary effort, you'll be a terrible governor, because we all know that that's gender specific. It has nothing to do with the policies or the platforms. I found it incredibly offensive. It is absolutely sexist on its face. And to New Mexico's credit, it did not work.
I was also told that I was scary. But again, I'm not really sure that that's necessarily sexist. I'll be blunt. I realize that I am a plus-size black female. I realize that. So there are some times that I know that I have to lower my voice. I have to talk a certain way. I like to speak with my hands, but maybe that's not a good idea right now, because I just know, right?
The speaker and I had a meeting with a lobbyist and one of his clients, and the speaker was in his office. I came into the office because I was to be part of the meeting where they were going to talk about their legislative priority. And the man said to me when I came in, the client, you know, I'd love a cup of coffee. And I looked at him and said, you know, I was going to get one for myself, so I'll get you one while I'm over there. And I got the cup of coffee and I came back and I sat it down in front of the guy. And then I sat down across from him at the table. And the speaker said, "This is the minority leader, Emily Kane. She's here for our meeting." And the man just, he stared at me and he said, I didn't, and he just stammered. And I said, "I hope you enjoy your cup of coffee and I'm sure we're going to have a great meeting."
When I was lieutenant governor, what happens when legislators take the oath of office, they have to come up to the lieutenant governor's office and then have their paperwork signed, standing there, and we usually take a picture. And I remember one Alaska senator, after I had signed that piece of paper and handed it to him with a smile, he said, "I really think you should be at home making muffins for your kids."
And I do remember one now former member who, one of my female colleagues had said, "No, I won't help you in this." He was running for leadership or something. And he was offended by that. And he actually said something like, "You know, she's the first woman leader I've ever worked with where I didn't try to get in her pants." And I thought, "Excuse me?" And he's upset about the fact that she wouldn't support him for a leadership position and that she should feel somehow grateful to him because he didn't try to solicit a relationship. I couldn't believe you said that.
He literally patted me on the head and said that it just wasn't my turn. "Really? You are patting me on the head like a little girl?" So I just said, "Well, I look forward to talking with you after the primary, and I hope, as you know, if I win, that you'll be with me." And of course, he was.
Often, someone might call you kiddo. "Hey, kiddo, good to see you." That's inappropriate. You know, sometimes that comes from fellow governors. I would never do that. Call a sitting governor who's nearly 50 years old kiddo.
I was campaigning for another candidate, and a gentleman approached me and began to berate the candidate that I was supporting. And the person said, "I cannot believe that you are a black female and supporting this person."
The day after I won, my husband and I decided to get away for a few days. And we went up to Louisville, Kentucky. We checked into the hotel. And that next morning, I went downstairs to get a cup of coffee. And I just charged it to my room, and the guy behind the counter looked at me and he's like, "Oh my gosh," he's like, "you're the first lady." And I said, "Oh no, I said, "I'm the one that got elected. I'm the new mayor." And he looked at me and he said, "Oh, we just assumed it was your husband." I thought, and that assumption followed me throughout my time in office.
I'll tell you the one that pissed me off the most, when the Secretary of State tried to fight my petition for the Ethics Committee for using campaign funds for childcare. I had conducted all of my correspondences with Dr. Gray because I'm a PhD. And so I signed everything Dr. Gray to make a point. And in everything he responded back to me, he called me Ms. Gray. And I was so mad.
And I went to a very prominent banker. He worked in an area of great influence in one of the largest markets in our state. I later asked someone, "So what did he think of me?" And the comment back was, "He said you were a cute puppy." And so I saw him and I approached him and I just kind of used humor, but I said, "Hey, I hear you think I'm a cute puppy." And he was a little surprised that that had gotten to me and that I then confronted him. And I told him that he should not misunderstand what I'm capable of doing and how I will lead because I wear high heels and have a smile. And I will tell you that that individual has been extremely supportive.
But I've not had anybody approach me in a way that has caused me to say, "Gee whiz, you know, that was really sexist." And I count myself fortunate in that regard.
I mean, it happens weekly. Like I said, I don't think some of these men know what they say is sexist. You're talking to a 70-year-old guy, and that's the language he's been using his whole life. Like, they will say, who's that hot chick lobbyist? They will just say that right to you, and you go, ooh, did he just say that? One of them actually called me the cute little cheerleader.
My Democratic opponent consistently on the campaign trail said that, how could I know what the constituents of Alabama's 3rd District needed because I wasn't a mom?
Well, there have been, and there still are, events where women are not allowed to attend those events, whether it's an oyster supper for charity or golf tournament where women are not allowed to attend. And I find that absolutely astonishing in 2019.
I don't feel like gender has ever been a challenge for me. I feel like it's more of an opportunity in our state.
I was involved in a controversial tweet situation this summer, so I started getting all kinds of phone calls and emails, and some of them were like threatening my life. Some of those were filled with hateful, sexist tropes and just awful things.
I think the most sexist thing I remember ever having to hear or have said to me was from a colleague of mine in the state legislature. He said this as he was looking me from foot to top of my head and back again. Hey, little lady, you look awful nice today. You should wear skirts like that more often. And it just about came out of my skin. I looked at him and I said, excuse me? And he said, oh, well, don't be offended. You look really nice. And I was like, of course I'm offended. And put your eyes back where they belong.
After the campaign, I was talking to one of my staff people who put on fundraising events. So they were always dealing with my supporters. And he said, you know, I just got tired of people saying to me, you know, you should tell Mary that if she could just smile a bit more, that would be good.
Conservative male farmers had said to me that I was too pretty to be running for public office.
I had a frank discussion with a couple of the aides one day, and I said, do you think you treat me any different than the male counterparts? And they looked at me, I said, because you do. You'll fawn all over yourself that do they want coffee, do they want tea, or let me make that copy for you, or this, that, or the other. You don't have to do that because I'm self-sufficient. I just want you to be aware of the different ways you treat them than you treat me. As a learning lesson here, this is what women do to other women. This isn't men doing this to us. This is where you need to be aware of it and overcome it.
This concept of a commission for women had been highly controversial in earlier years, and I couldn't imagine why. I had some of my male friends in the Indiana Senate provide quite a bit of ribbing and jokes along the way, telling me they were going to take their shirts off when they voted on the Indiana Commission for Women bill. And then I had a seatmate say to me one day, I think, and he was joking, of course, but he said, I think I shall start a white man's caucus. And I told him he had one for 200 years.
You know, I didn't understand why essentially he had thrown his caucus under the bus with his vote. He looked at me and he said, you don't have to understand. It's not for you to understand. And he was like, let the adults in the room take care of business. And so obviously I balked at that. And then he told me to shut up.
When I first announced that I was pregnant, you know, while most of the comments that I received were supportive and very happy and congratulatory, there were some negative comments towards me for deciding to have a child while in statewide office. And I'll never forget that a gentleman in my office asked me why my husband just didn't get me a dog instead of getting me pregnant.
To refer to as, you're a really nice girl. Excuse me? I haven't been a girl for a really long time. I don't like girl. I don't like gal. I ain't your sweetie. I ain't your honey. I ain't none of that. Okay, if you really remember my name, call me Colonel, call me Doctor, but you're not going to call me girl.
My opponent encountered me at a Greek church festival where I was out campaigning, and he came up to me and he said, why are you out here? You're everywhere. What's going on? Why are you working so hard? And I said, because I expect to be the next congresswoman from Rhode Island. And he said, oh, forget about it. Pretty soon you'll be back home washing dishes and scrubbing floors.
I can only tell this story because this gentleman has passed away. He was a longtime member of legislature here in Mississippi. A good old boy. Everybody loved him. I mean, I loved him. But he would say things that were inappropriate. And my first year, I came up for some hearings, some budget hearings. The committee broke for lunch, and I walked up to the front and shook hands with everybody. And this gentleman, in a very loud voice, said, look, there's Dodie. She's such a fine little heifer. And I was just appalled, sitting in front of the entire room. And, you know, in moments like that, you have to decide how you're going to take it. And so I laughed and said, well, you're a handsome man, too. You know, we went on. But that's just always stayed in my mind.
You're listening to 538's Oral History Project, When Women Run. Next, we'll hear if the candidates themselves feel voters are sexist. But before we do that, let's have a word from this week's sponsor.
Today's podcast is brought to you by C-SPAN. Go deep, direct, and unfiltered with C-SPAN's Campaign 2020. You'll find in-depth coverage of the candidates, issues, and events that are steering us to Election Day. Follow the campaigns on C-SPAN and then dig even deeper in C-SPAN's online archive. Get an unfiltered view of politics with C-SPAN's Campaign 2020 on the C-SPAN television networks, on the C-SPAN app, and online at cspan.org. Make up your own mind with C-SPAN's Campaign 2020. Today's podcast is also brought to you by Upstart. Between hitting the gym, eating healthier, or learning a new skill, there are lots of ways we can better ourselves in the new year. One important way can be starting the year off by tackling high-interest credit card debt. Upstart.com is here to help. Upstart is the revolutionary lending platform that offers smarter rates to help you pay off high-interest credit card debt. Upstart goes beyond the traditional credit score when assessing your credit worthiness. They actually reward you based on your education and job history in the form of a smarter rate. Upstart believes you're more than just your credit score. They believe in you. The best part, once the loan is approved and accepted, most people get their funds the very next business day. Over 400,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards or meet their financial goals. Free yourself from the burden of high-interest credit card debt by consolidating everything into one monthly payment with Upstart. See why Upstart is ranked number one in their category with over 300 businesses on Trustpilot, and hurry to upstart.com/politics to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes a few minutes. Again, that's upstart.com/politics. All right, back to When Women Run.
In general, do you think American voters are sexist?
Yes. We saw it with the last presidential election. We see it every single day in the way that people talk about certain members of Congress who are women. And I see it right here at home.
No, I just think they're ill-informed.
I do not. In the 25 years I've been overseeing elections, I think party affiliation in partisan offices far outweighs gender.
No, but I do believe as you move up to higher office that gender causes more Americans to pause and give it more serious consideration.
Yes, but not necessarily consciously.
If you ask Americans to define a leader or draw a portrait of a leader, it is more likely to be a man than a woman.
I think there's a difference between sexism and having gender bias. And I think that most people can vote for merit, but you've got to overcome the biases that are built in our society.
Yes, it's really difficult to generalize an entire population.
No, I don't think so. Not even in the traditionally, you know, macho-dominated world of Hispanics, if you can generalize like that.
Depends on which age group. We've just seen for so long what elected officials look like. They're older, they're white, and they're male. And so we just need time as a country, as a culture, to adjust.
It's interesting. Sometimes I think women are actually more sexist than men. I think some women don't think women can hold political office.
What I found from polling was that older women looked at me more skeptically than the rest of the electorate.
If a candidate does their due diligence in expressing their position on issues based on what they're running for, I think that we have a smart enough population that they'll vote based on the true value of the candidate, not based on their gender.
I don't think that they would come out and vote for me if they were sexist. They voted for me because we shared the same values.
When I go into like a county courthouse where they've had the pictures of the people who've held offices in the past, you don't see diversity. You don't see women. So the answer has to be yes. You know, I reluctantly say it, but it's the truth. Because if it wasn't that, then why is it that we have what we have?
You can't generalize and say the people are that way. I think it depends on who you are. I think it depends on how you were raised. I think it depends on where you live.
In America, yes. In Alaska, no.
If you're running for superintendent of public instruction in Wyoming, you're more likely to be elected if you're a woman than a male. If you're running for governor in Wyoming, you're more likely to be elected if you're a male than a female.
I can relate to here in North Dakota. It's not uncommon for a woman to be a treasurer, and I think part of that, when you talk to folks, we're in an agricultural and farming and ranching communities where the woman works side by side with her husband on the farm and on the ranch, and many times it's the woman who's managing the checkbook.
At the end of the day, most people just want to feel like they have an opportunity for themselves and for their kids to have a better life. And I don't think that that's a gender-specific concern.
No. And what proved that was what happened, you know, the last election, where that many women were elected.
No, I do not. I think that in any campaign, you have to make the case why you're the better choice. That's what a campaign is. I think if you effectively make that argument, you can win voters over, even those that have doubt in their mind.
A couple of years ago, I was at the pavilion of a local beach, and I heard a woman, she was talking to her daughter, who was probably 5, 6 years old, 7 years old. She said, "Oh, honey, look, there's the governor. I want you to go meet the governor." And the little girl said, "Where is he?" And the mother said, no, it's her." And the girl was like, "The governor's a woman?" And the mother said, "Yeah." And then they came over and, you know, took a picture. And it was so eye-opening for me. When you hear governor, president, general, CEO, admiral, you think male.
And how did the media talk about your gender, if at all?
There was a particular writer for one of the small town newspapers who was quite sexist in his comments. He actually called me a sex kitten, and that was pretty stupefying, really. It's so far out of the norm, but I don't think it meant it in a bad way, but it was not acceptable, of course.
Local media never really talked about it much. I think it was the national press that kind of highlighted it because you saw this like national trend of women candidates running for the first time.
At one point, the Houston Chronicle did what I call the gallery of bad haircuts. It showed pictures of me from their files over the years with different hairstyles.
No, I have to say from county office to legislative office to my time as Indiana's lieutenant governor, I was treated with nothing but respect from the media. I think that speaks very well of the journalists in the state of Indiana.
It seemed that really deep down inside, a lot of them wanted to be fashion reporters because they were the ones who would comment on, "I look too much like the former Republican governor, Tom Kane. I look like a Tom Kane in pearls," where I was too well-dressed to really relate to the average voter in New Jersey.
Not really. I would say there really wasn't any discussion about gender other than just to say that, I was a female. When I ran for governor, I was, you know, the only woman in a four-way race, and that was never an issue.
There was a lot of stories about how I yelled. Now, do I yell sometimes? Yes. I'm just freaking loud. Like, I just wake up loud. But you know what? Bernie Sanders is always yelling. Always yelling. Hillary got criticized for being loud. The man is the biggest yeller, like him or hate him, in politics.
there was a reporter, she said something in the paper about, you know, this time it's different, two women are facing off against each other, and it was kind of a commentary article, but in it she used a pejorative description and talked about a cat fight, you know. So I actually called her and talked to her. She's a young woman reporter, and I said, look, you know, I have no problem with you describing this as a tough race, because it is, but be careful about your terms in being pejorative towards women candidates and using things. If I were facing a guy, you probably wouldn't have said that, wouldn't have written it in that way.
Sometimes we'll do social media around me with my family or me cooking. And often questions will be like, but hold on, I'm confused. Which one are you? Are you this like serious leader, or are you a warm and fuzzy mom? It's almost like they can't understand that you could be both.
And he says, do you have a boyfriend? And the one in my head is, that's a little bit of an odd question, but not as if it's not one I get from my mother every day. So it's like, yes. The next question really started going off in my head. How serious is it? He said to me, well, I just wonder what happens if you get married and have children someday. How would you do this job?
I gave the State of the State in February as the sitting governor, and my kids, my two daughters, they're 15 and 17. You know, we were trying to figure out what I was going to wear, and we picked out a blue dress. It was a pretty color of blue, and it was high neck, so it wasn't revealing, and it was, you know, went down past my knee. Well, one of the news stations in Detroit did a whole segment on the television news interviewing people and asking them what they thought about my dress. They interviewed a man at a gas station and said, what did you think about the governor's dress? And of course, he hadn't even seen it. They played it for him so he could weigh in on it, right? So it's not even like a person that was watching that. And he said, I think she looks like she might be pregnant. I saw that and I heard that, and it was so hurtful.
Even when I was the first Republican woman to be endorsed for the United States Senate, that wasn't really a story. And I kind of thought it was a big deal, but it wasn't a story.
I mean, there was this one columnist who's just a jerk. He's more a gossip columnist than anything else. But the Speaker of the House now and I are very good friends, and he was the majority leader before. You know, we don't agree on certain things, but we're friends. And, you know, he's single and I'm single. And at one point he wrote many columns implying that he and I have like a relationship that's not professional, which is just not true. And he wrote in one column, and this, I'm going to repeat this to you because this is a detail I will never forget. He said, at least we know one prominent Democrat has the playbook of the Republicans, implying that if he and I were having a romantic relationship, then I, as the silly, stupid girl that would be all googly-eyed, would be spilling all of the our Republican secrets to him.
The media has not really referenced my gender overtly. But at the same time, I think that I've seen the media treat me in a different way because of my gender. And what I mean by that, especially one of our local newspapers is always apt to tell me what I should and should not be doing, what I need to focus on, what I don't need to focus on. And I find that very curious.
I was at an editorial board, and I won't say the name of the paper, but one of the members, a woman, said, well, what's it like to be a Republican in Connecticut? And then a little lower, kind of under her breath, but audible to everybody, and especially as a woman.
Thankfully, the women who walked before me probably paved that route for me. I really don't think the media had any bias against me whatsoever for being a woman.
2018, I had a faux moderate Republican opponent. I beat him at the ballot. The Oregonian said their headline was Brown Holds On. I beat him by over 7 percentage points. I kicked his ass. Brown Holds On, to me, the imagery is by her fingernails, right? She barely won. That's total and complete baloney. I totally creamed him, and that the headline was so unreflective of the actual victory, to me, is nothing other than gender discrimination.
When I first came into the position, I sat down with a reporter. He asked me how I could do this job and do it well. I'm a woman and a mother, you know, how is this possible? And I thought, oh, what a great opportunity. I can run through my whole resume. I got this, right? I can do this. And he asked the question the second time. No, you know, how can you do this job? Well, you're a wife and a mother. And I thought, oh, okay. Well, I have a support system. I am very fortunate to have the support of my family. You know, not everybody has a support system that I do. I know that. And I am just so lucky to have that. And he asked it a third time. And I finally said, look, I'm not sure that I can answer this question in a way that is going to satisfy you. And after the interview was over, he turned off the tape recorder, you know, put his notes away. And the gentleman that was working for me at the time and my communication staff said, you know, do you ask everybody that question? Do you ask the men that have had children and in public office these questions? And he said, of course not. And then I think he caught himself and said, well, okay, yes, I do. Yes, I do.
The conversations that they were having weren't necessarily about gender, but there was definitely a conversation about age, about viability, and then later on a conversation about race.
This news reporter who was writing a story about the race, and he was in our car as we were driving to an event, and he said she was primping and fretting about whether the event would be successful. Like, you know, I was some little magnolia flower or something. That really stuck with me.
The very first interview that I had with a political reporter from the Providence Journal, the gentleman said to me, why are you running for Congress? You should either be a preacher or a teacher. And thought that that was rather amusing.
I was running against another woman, and I can remember this talk show host on the radio who was going to moderate our debate in talking about it. He was talking with another radio host, and he gave the cat sound of meow.
What advice would you give to women running today?
Don't tell me you want to run for office. Tell me what you want to do. A political office is not a destination. A political office is a tool. And if you don't know what you want to do with that tool, you shouldn't pick it up and hold it in your hand.
You've got to have a strong, if you have children for sure, a strong relationship with your partner and be very open and honest about the time commitment. Because I have seen marriages fall apart because suddenly partners can't handle the shared workload.
Women, we build these imaginary boundaries because we think that we can't do this. But obviously, there's a great number of idiots who are doing it, and we can do it better than them. So we should just do it.
The best advice I've ever received came from my husband in 2001 when I was trying to decide if I was going to run for auditor. And he said, you know, I know you'll learn how to be a candidate, you'll be a good leader, all that stuff. But what I worry about is that you want people to like you. And in politics, people are not going to like you for things that you have no control over. People are not going to like you because you're a Republican. People are not going to like you because you're a woman. People are not going to like you because you're a redhead. And he said, I'm afraid you're going to take that personally.
If it doesn't get you money or it doesn't get you votes, then you shouldn't be doing it. So a lot of people will call you and be like, oh, I want you to speak at this meeting. Does it get you votes or does it get you money? Because they'll want you to do things that take away from your time getting votes or money. And if you don't have either of those things, then you're not going to win.
Be prepared. It's hard work. Don't wear your heart on your sleeve. And if someone is attacking you, they're not attacking your sex. They're probably attacking either your political standing or they're attacking what you're saying. You know, you may not have said something in the proper way. You need to reflect inside of you first before you start saying, well, you know, that's sexist or that's racist or something like that. No, it's probably just the fact that people don't agree with you.
Sometimes I hate that saying of like, oh, you got to have a thick skin to handle all of this. But I think you also have to have like empathy too. And you have to take care of yourself at the same time, which honestly could be really hard when you have a family.
Really make sure that you're in charge of your own campaign.
You know, I would suggest that you don't listen all the time to those consultants that you have because they don't really have all the answers. And they're, you know, these people have never run for office.
You don't have to know all the answers. We're used to feeling like we have to be so much more to get ahead. And it really turns out that if you're just a good person, a good listener, you really care. Of course, you have to have a message that resonates, but probably more important than the message is how you deliver it.
One of the exhausting pieces of running for office is that everyone gives you advice. I don't know if men get this. I suspect they don't. But as a woman, everyone, you know, about what you're wearing, about your voice, about whether you say too much or if you talk too little or whatever it is. And so you need some people who are just going to be there to support you, not to give you advice.
If you're thinking about running for office, get involved now by finding a candidate who you really care about and volunteering for that candidate so that you can learn some of the ropes, so you can start canvassing, so you can make some phone calls, see what it's like to fundraise, and see if this is really something that you want to commit so much of your physical and emotional and mental energy to, because I can't overstate how mentally and physically difficult this work is.
You'll be in there and people are going to ask you about whether or not you want to have kids in a conversation about donations. And then they're going to turn around and not ask your competitor that same question. And you can choose to pick every fight and call out every donor, but you can also take the hit and yeah, it's not fair, but you can't fight every battle. And that for me was a very hard thing to accept.
If I were to give advice to women who are running today, is to be as normal and as everyday as you can be, because when I see male candidates, they just seem so stuck up and full of themselves, and you don't have to sound like you're a professor when you're on the stump, and you can talk about your personal life. And I think that voters are looking for authentic leaders, and they see a lot of pompous asses.
Run a positive campaign. Talk about where you're going and what you're going to do. Don't spend your time and your message on your opponent in a critical fashion.
Work probably harder than anybody else. Careful never to burn a bridge, because you never know when one of your colleagues can come to your aid and help you get a bill passed. Be open to new ideas, but be willing to not always be out front.
Just run. Well, I'm not ready. I haven't done X, Y, Z. Like, well, okay, well, you're not going to be ready until you do it. So there's no way you can have experience for public office until you are in public office. There's just nothing that is the correct preparation.
If you're running and you're a woman, you better be the most qualified. And if you are the most qualified, if I could vote for you, you'd get my vote. If you aren't, then you shouldn't be running. And I truly believe that. I don't think having a uterus should qualify anybody for anything.
We have to demand our place at the table. And, you know, that's what people say, or we're going to be on the menu, right?
The only way it's ever going to get better is if more women do it. Like, the reason that it's hard for women is because it's still too unusual. And a lot of this unconscious bias isn't actually malicious. It's human. It's because there are still relatively few women in these positions. People are wondering, what's wrong with you? Why do you want to do this? You must be weird. So what I tell women is we have to normalize female leadership. The concept that a woman would be the president, would be the governor, would be the CEO has to become normal.
Thanks again for listening. I'm Grace Lynch, the producer of this episode. Again, a huge shout out to the entire 538 newsroom who conducted these interviews. Tune back in on Friday for Claire's interview with former candidate for Georgia governor, Stacey Abrams, and make sure to check out different chapters of When Women Run on 538.com every day this week.